Okay, I didn't like it.
That's okay.
Does that matter to you, Mark?
Yeah, sure as fuck does.
Okay, then.
So, but, okay, so, but.
About to catch these hands.
But here's.
You're about to catch these hands, bro.
My God.
Hand catching. Oh. 101.
Boy, all right, everybody.
Professor Palumbo.
Gather around, everyone.
I take back my zaddy.
I don't blame you. Greetings, savory inferiors, and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast dedicated to recapping and reacting to AMC's Immortal Universe, including Interview with the Vampire and the Mayfair Witches. In each episode, hosts Joanne Palumbo, Christina LaRusso, and myself, Mark Snedeker, summarize the episode, talk about Easter eggs, discuss standout characters and their arcs, explore some of the predominant themes, and identify the best magic moment in a segment called Witch Please. Join us now as we dive into Episode 5, The Thrall. Hello, Joanne Tina Palumrusso.
Hello, Zaddy.
Oh, she gave you the Zaddy.
She did. I got promoted. I think that's a promotion.
Zaddy Snedeker.
Let's calm down, ladies. There's enough of me to go around.
Hi, Christina.
Hi, Joanne. Hi, Mark.
Christina, do you want to give us a hot take on this, the fifth episode of the series?
I like this episode. I thought it was obviously very action-packed. It carried the storyline along. We're moving forward. We've got three more episodes left to kind of reach the conclusion, and it is my understanding that they are going to try and reach the same conclusion here that they reach in the book. So,
which is Rowan fucked shit up in the book.
Yeah. So they're heading in that direction. The episode was good. The story is a great story. There is just something timing wise or whatever that is a little slow, but I don't think that it's bad. There's nothing bad about this. It's not just
fatal.
No, it's not a fatal thing. They've been renewed for season two.
Nice.
But I think that some of these issues that are there maybe with the writing and the dialogue, I think some of those things are going to get worked out in hopefully in season two. But I enjoyed it. Lots of magic. We're going to have a really good Witch Please segment.
I think it was a really good episode. But again, there's something off it's just not connecting for me as a show. We definitely got some answers on a couple things, right? Which we'll touch on. So I always appreciate that when a show doesn't leave you hanging for 4 or 5 episodes, not knowing what the heck is going on. They're getting to the point of most things rather quickly. And that I do appreciate. So I'll give them some credit for that.
They really, really leaned into the witchcraft here.
It was definitely magic packed. That I will say.
Yeah, and I do actually agree with previous guest Micah, where I prefer the magic to be a little more subtle, but sometimes you just got to go all in. So instead of being, subtle and kind of read between the lines that there's magic going on, now we're in the craft, right? I mean, Manon cannot be far away.
They're going to be calling the corner soon.
I think we've seen even a little sneak preview where they're doing some kind of shit. So I liked it. Rowan is starting to at least take shape and not just be a passive victim here. She's now, inserting herself into the narrative, and she's trying to protect Sip, and she's trying to make some decisions and take control of shit here. Does she make the right decisions? No, she does not. But that's Rowan. Rowan makes bad decisions, a lot of bad decisions. So this is totally within a theme here.
Yeah, it's on brand for her.
Yeah, so I enjoyed the episode, and I think we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Christina, do you want to give us a quick recap of the episode? Is that something you feel like you want to do?
So we're in Scotland, and someone is giving birth. Now, the person who is giving birth is the wife of the man who was in the woods with Suzanne.
Getting the handy.
Yeah, hand job Harry.
He's actually...
Oh, sorry, that's Sir Handjob Harry to you.
Lord Handjob Harry.
His character is the glove maker, the village glove maker. Uh-huh.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I bet. That's not a coincidence. Like, do you think she said, no glove, no love? And he's like, that is not a problem. I have so many gloves.
I have 40 million gloves. And isn't that interesting? And yes.
He's a glove, yeah, with sip, yeah.
Yes. So this woman is giving birth, and Suzanne is midwifing. Flory, the young sister, mm-hmm. seems to be her sister, is also there in the process. And when the baby is born, here comes the man, and he's like, is it a boy? Right. Yes, it is. And
oh, but it's also an amphibian.
It's got webbed fingers.
Yes.
Parked
up. Which he immediately rejects and says, you were here bringing her all of these things.
You have the devil in you.
And so, of course, he's blaming Suzanne. Now, I'm going to have some stuff to say about this when we get to the...
I have zero doubt.
...themes and all of that. But, all right, so then the next day, Suzanne is looking to go to the woman's home to give her some more sustenance.
Yeah.
She's not there, and no one's there. Well, they're over here in the town square, I guess. And here is the witch hunter.
Yeah.
Come from the kirk. Now...
Yeah, the kirk.
The kirk, which is the church, the Scottish church. So he is ranting and raving about witches.
Right.
And he uses the words that we had heard Deirdre use when she took control of Lasher to go and spy on Rowan. The glove maker is exchanging glances with Suzanne in scary glances. And Suzanne is clearly agitated. And so then she leaves the scene. And the wife is in a cage.
Yeah. So he basically had his own wife imprisoned for producing an amphibious son.
I guess.
That's a strong alpha male move.
I mean, you know, let's start him training. He could be the Michael Phelps of Scotland.
He could. All right. So as they're walking away, and this is important too, Flory starts reciting the words.
Yeah.
And Suzanne says, don't say those words. Those are wicked words.
Right.
And then we cut to modern day where Sip and Rowan are in bed together.
Yeah.
And they're having this intimate pillow talk. And then Sip says, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go and make you breakfast. So the breakfast happens. And then pretty soon it seems like it's the next day.
Right.
And the scene is repeating itself.
Yeah.
Well, and they're having these intimate conversations. This is a real intimacy that they're sharing. And Rowan actually says to him, usually I'm done by now.
Right.
This, what we're doing is
Hit it and quit it kind of girl.
This is way outside of her comfort zone. So anyway, they're having these conversations and this repeats itself again. And then finally a third time. And on the third time, Sip is kind of slower.
Yeah.
And he's kind of stumbling and he goes to the kitchen and you can see that the presentation of the food on the third day is not
a little sloppy.
It's a little sloppy. Yeah. You see him walk through the
dining room,
the burnt dining room. And so now you realize, okay, they seem to be ignoring the fact that all that went on.
Yeah.
Well, then she discovers that he's injured and she kind of leaps into doctor mode. And they kind of realize, like, well, how long have we been here?
The whole scene just had so many holes in it for me. I don't know. I didn't like this. Okay. How long were they allegedly there for? Because when push comes to shove, right, and we're at the end where Sip gets, you know, Rowan says to send him to safety or whatever, to Lasher or whatever she says, and he's back in present day. So how long were they in this made-up dream world? Were they really getting up and going through these motions? Like, was he injured the whole time and they just couldn't see it?
We're going to talk about that. Let's get through the recap and then we'll talk about all of that. They realize that something's amiss here. And then she jumps into doctor's mode and she's going to try and fix him. And she says, well, we got to get out of here. We got to get you to the hospital. Well, then they can't get out of the house.
Yeah.
The house is locked down. And no matter what she tries to do, breaks windows or tries to get through doors, she can't get out. So then she goes looking around the house to try and figure out a different way to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And she finds the ghost of Millie Mayfair.
She does find
I was right.
Well, there was no doubt that you were right.
I was right. I finally had a theory that was correct.
And you notice it was such a simple theory, right? Like, normally you have these very complex and long and convoluted theories and they don't pan out.
You have to say things like, stay with me. Here's how. You remember the Middle Ages, right?
No. All right.
And so, also, do you understand quantum mechanics? Okay, good. I'm going to tie them all together.
No.
So all right. The simplest theory was your right theory, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, way to go, Occam's razor.
So Millie is suffering because Carlotta is lost to Millie, and Millie is fading.
Yeah.
And so then Rowan says, help me figure out how to get this done. How did Carlotta lock him out? And then she shows her this sort of exorcism, this rite of exorcism that Carlotta performed.
Reluctantly, though, Millie didn't really trust her.
No, Millie does not trust her at all. So anyway, Rowan goes down into the basement, finds the herbs, and Lasher's talking to her. He says to her, do you recognize this? This is an autopsy table.
I know, that was very confusing.
It's so Lasher, throughout this, is kind of talking to her.
It was a little bit of a fever dream.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
And kind of giving her directions. But when she goes.
Hints. Like, kind of like. If you want it, it'll happen.
If you want it to happen, it will happen. Right. So she says, you know, she wants the basement door to open, and the basement door opens, and then she says, well, you did that, but you make me think that I did that. Right. So there's a lot of mind games going on here.
There is.
We'll get there. Finally, she just realizes Sip is in big trouble. She can't do this exorcism. And so she says, Lasher, let him go. Damn. I will play whatever this game is that you want me to play. And by that, Sip disappears.
Not just disappears.
I was going to say, it's like sucked into the wall.
Yeah, it's like somebody cut his silver thread in the astral plane, and he just went zooming out of the, he got sucked out of the house.
Sip ended up back at his apartment, where Odette finds him.
I mean, why not send him to the hospital, though?
Who knows?
Because he knows that it's not it's a magical injury.
True.
Odette finds Sip. But in the meantime, Sip has called somehow for the Talamasca to come because he knows this injury is magical. Rowan has sussed that out.
Yeah.
And Odette is told to hide. The Talamasca come in, and it's Samir and yet another Talamasca agent.
Yeah.
And she is there to do the magical spell. It's an unbinding spell.
Yes, which we'll talk about.
And she puts him in a circle of salt, and she goes through this and does this chanting. Right. And
which, by the way, sloppiest circle of salt I've ever seen. Well, I can tell you.
Right? I'm like, there's not supposed to be those breaks in it. It's supposed to be solid.
Yeah, I can tell you from personal experience, when you have breaks in the circle, you're risking letting the demon out.
Oh,
so just be careful,
people. All right. So back to Rowan. Here she is now with Lasher, and Lasher tells her, dress up in this dress.
We're going to Studio 54.
And it's a 1920s dress.
Yeah.
And so then she comes down the stairs in this really beautiful dress, and they dance.
It's a nice dress.
Wearing proper shoes.
Ever. Yep. She's got some heels on, and then he says, well, I do what you want me to do. What you want to do is dance. And so then
she's like, oh, yeah, I guess that is what I want to do.
And then they start dancing. And so then she's questioning him. And then they dance around a little bit, and then he says, you want sovereignty, you want to be adored.
That is what I want to be like, you know, so she believes it.
And he says, you want cake.
Well, who the hell doesn't want cake?
And she said,
well,
that's ridiculous.
That's always true.
My heart's desire is not a cake. I'm not 6 years old. And he's like, oh, don't be embarrassed. Yeah, here's a whole table of cake. And she digs right in.
She's like, oh, okay.
They take a trip through her past, where she's running through the fields, and he says, you know, you want this. And she said, oh, I can remember how it felt that day.
Yeah.
And then she comes across a dead fox.
Right.
Which, of course, remember, there was a dead fox on the ground in her dream.
Yes.
And from an earlier episode. And she talks about feeling frustration because she couldn't help it. And then they're out under the stars in the same area that she was running through as a child. And then she sees the fox run.
Yeah.
And she's like, you've healed it. And he said, we have, you know,
yes.
So he gets her right to this point of happiness. Like all of these things, these are the things. And she's right there with him. And Lasher has this fatal flaw. He just doesn't know when to quit.
Yeah.
Because the next thing he does is zip her back to the house where Carlotta is suspended. Yeah.
Bro, you were doing good.
He had her.
And you just fucked up.
And then he goes, and you want this. And it was Carlotta.
And she's like, well, That's a lot.
That's a lot. And she says she doesn't want it. So please let Carlotta come down.
He's like,
and,
but you will. Well, he's not wrong about that.
Right. So she gets Carlotta come. He releases whatever spell he had Carlotta suspended.
Yeah,
in that.
The hanging spell.
So she falls down. And then she and Roan have a conversation. Carlotta is still a zealot.
Talk about somebody who doesn't know when to quit. Carlotta.
Old girl's committed. The old girl is committed to the cause, right? I'll give her that, Carlotta. Like, she's like, you need to die. You want out? I'll show you how to get out. Jump over this.
Well, right. And she was trying to do another Antha.
Yeah.
She's trying to tempt her over the...
Right, over the railing.
...balcony.
Yep. Just kill yourself.
And she didn't. Oh, and speaking of Antha...
Yeah.
We saw another ghost in the house.
We did.
And Micah was correct about their guess about who that ghost was. It was Stuart Townsend.
That's right.
Stuart Townsend was having a conversation, this is earlier in the episode, with Sip and saying, hey, don't fall in love with them.
Right. Which, by the way, I agree with that.
Don't fall in love with these makers.
Oh, no. They're toxic. They're dangerous. They're vipers.
So anyway, back to Carlotta and Rowan's standoff on the balcony.
Yeah.
Carlotta says, I should have killed you when you were a
baby.
My
God, again, Carlotta.
Yeah, that was a little rough.
Calm down, Carlotta.
You can say all this over her dead body after you throw her off the balcony.
It gave her a lot of time to conjure up the spell of killing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. And for Rowan, all that means is, I'm mad. Maybe your heart's going to explode here shortly.
Yeah.
And that was...
And that's it. And then...
Stupid.
And then Carlotta over the edge of the thing. And then this was the coolest scene, though, to me. When Rowan walks out of the house and the camera turns upside down.
Did that not look like fangs to you?
Oh, I didn't notice that. Did it look like fangs?
Looks like fangs, yeah.
Obviously, yes, the world is being turned upside down for her. This is really her through the looking glass moment.
That was it. We didn't really come up with any Easter eggs this week.
No, but there's some stuff.
I mean, there's some stuff.
Related material, like foreshadowing and references and anachronisms a little bit. And maybe Joni's fang thing.
I was just going to say, maybe the fangs is just a little, you know, hidden gem, a little nod.
Could be.
By the way, if they just can figure out a way to, with no publicity, no foreshadowing whatsoever, to have Lestat or somebody of that ilk just kind of wander into a scene at some point, can you imagine the fucking press and reactions that they would get?
It would be incredible.
It would be, it's marketing genius, which means they definitely will not do
it. No.
If it's Sam Reed, I really do believe that Sam Reed, I said it before.
Yeah.
He's the karmic salve that we've all needed.
Yeah.
Maybe he's that for this too.
I mean, he could.
I still think that Odette's surrogacy is for Sam Reed. I mean, for Lestat.
The gay couple.
You're going to have another kid? It didn't really work out that well the first time.
Do you think he learns from his mistakes?
Well, no. He never has a single time in his whole life.
Right. So why wouldn't he get a surrogate?
Because Louis might.
I there's somebody else that needs a surrogate in this story more than Lestat, though.
Yeah.
Lasher.
But she can't see Lasher, can she?
That would be a pretty startling departure.
It would be a big departure.
Yeah.
We don't know. But all right. So let's talk about some of the themes. Okay. Right. Joanne.
Yes.
You were talking about the plot holes in those early scenes. And I want to direct us to the title of
the thrall. Episode.
The Thrall. Thrall, its definition is slave.
Right.
But as we have come to understand it, is kind of the state of being under someone's control or under the power of someone or something.
Under my thumb.
Yes.
Enthralled with them.
Yep. Yep.
Yes, that too.
Yep. Not only do we have, is Lasher in control of things or is Rowan?
Right.
Because supposedly Lasher is under the control of the designee.
But that is obviously almost never been the case. Like, he's influenced by them, but he's really pulling the strings.
Then also, there's something going on with this house. The house is really a character in this episode, particularly.
Yeah.
in the sense that the house, and I know that Lasher is controlling things in the house, but the house does seem to have some kind of spell over it.
And Lasher has more power in the house than outside of the house. Mm-hmm. The showrunners have said that. And again, they've made not only the necklace, but the house kind of more totemic, mm-hmm. and given it its independent power rather than just where shit always happens.
It is. And so, Joanne, that to me is where we go back to those first three, the first three mornings. And I think that it is just 3 days. And I think that this is a spell. And Sip says so. He wants me dead. And so what he's done is kind of distracted them. He can obviously tell that Rowan has an attraction to Sip, although I certainly can't tell that. I could not tell that until they're in bed together. And then even then, I'm like, I'm not sure if I buy this.
You know, I thought last week that there was a little bit of chemistry between them. But in this week's episode, I didn't feel it.
Do you know what I think we need to really bring the chemistry to the fore?
What?
Nudity.
Little boob action.
Yeah, because look, they're in bed allegedly for like 4 days or something, going at it hammer and tong, and they're still wearing clothes. Now look, and I'm not even saying like for prurient reasons. Like you don't have to show everything, but it just seems very like 1950s to say, oh, look, they're both still wearing jammies.
Here's the thing. They're being intimate in a way that is different for Rowan. Rowan, it's very easy for Rowan to be having sex. Sex to Rowan isn't the thing. The real intimacy with Rowan comes from sharing these secrets. And she's talking to him and sharing these secrets with him.
But
and
him also with her. Banging.
Yeah, they're banging. Why do you think they're not, Christina?
Yeah, no. I'm sure that they are, but we as an audience don't
need to see that.
We don't get to see it.
Right.
We assume that that's happened.
Yeah.
But what is important to the writers to show us is that Rowan and Sip are having a connection that's an intimate connection.
A mature relationship.
Yeah, well, because that is the hard part for her. So they're having these conversations. That's the distraction. That's the thrall. They're in thrall of that intimacy. So, Joe, where are the holes for you in this?
Did those days actually happen? Did they go to sleep, wake up, conduct each day and just didn't realize that they were doing it? And
I think they're just in a loop of the morning, you know? I think that's the loop.
Well, in real time, how long was it?
Doesn't matter.
Probably 3 days. I think it was probably three days.
Yeah, but who cares? It's less than 400.
Were they catatonic the rest of the day? Like,
time isn't happening normally to them.
I don't know. I just didn't like it.
I think it's meant to be confusing. I think it's okay that it's confusing.
Definitely work. Yeah.
And
I agree. I think it should be disorienting and confusing because it's disorienting and confusing to them.
What you're seeing happen there, the time that's passing could be 24 hours, but for them, they're just stuck in this moment of bliss because what Lasher might say to Rowan is, this is what you wanted.
I gave it to you.
I gave you what you wanted over and over and over again.
I want pancakes. It's now pancakes for the rest of your life.
It's this infinite loop. All right. So the thrall continues. And there's then the question, and I think we have to grapple with this. Who's in control? Is it Lasher or is it Rowan?
I think it's Lasher that's in control. I don't think Rowan has any control in this.
She is trying to assert some control, but she's really just following Lasher's plan.
Correct.
Which is, I want interaction with you, and she's giving him that. I want you to eat the fucking cake. She's like, fine, I'll eat the cake. She is definitely, at this point at least, following his plan. Even though she thinks she's, you know, I've decided and this is what I'm going to do. Well, he set her up to do that. He put Sip in danger so that she would have to bargain. She does. He's getting what he wants.
And
got rid of Carlotta.
Carlotta's gone.
Got rid of Sip. Got Rowan in the flapper dress.
Eating cake.
Dancing to inexplicably a song from 2014.
So her power, such that it is not her power.
It's a wild and unfocused thing at this point. And she doesn't know what to do with it or what the limits of it are. She just knows if she gets mad enough, she can kill a human. That she knows how to do.
She's like a child wielding a loaded gun.
She's just, you know, a wild, uncontrolled force of nature at this point.
So this is kind of where my confusion is, Joe. Do these women have power that is independent of Lasher?
Right.
That take Lasher out of the picture. There is a power there. Are they really witches? And I would say that they have to have that. They have something because Rowan had it. She didn't have contact with Lasher.
Right.
Right. I was just going to say that when she was in San Francisco, she had power.
Ultimately, though, she exists because of Lasher's machinations.
Rowan does.
Yeah. Because he has been influencing the incestuous family tree of the Mayfairs for hundreds of years to try to get to this point where they produce Rowan, who is the 13th witch, who is strong enough to carry out his ghoulish fantasies and plans.
What is his plan? Like, what's the end game?
From the book, I can tell you what his plan is. What it is in the show, I don't know. In the book, he has two plans. He wants to become a real boy. It's like Pinocchio.
He's Pinocchio.
He is Pinocchio. He's a tall, creepy, sexy Pinocchio. and he wants to reproduce.
Okay.
Those are his goals in the books.
Joanne wasn't wrong back in the earlier episode where she said Odette and her pregnancy
must mean
something.
Yeah.
And I think that
they could use her as not a even, surrogate for Lasher.
Maybe, but I don't know if she will be the surrogate or if just the pregnancy, like fecundity. Like we just had the midwifery, of all of that as a symbolic of,
man, showrunners love to show difficult births.
I went back and I was watching episode 2 because I wanted to check and see if the husband in this was actually the guy in the woods.
Yeah.
What I noticed in the earlier episode is when she's giving him the hand job, she looks up and a flock of birds fly over her. And in the background, it's whispering Suzanne.
Really?
Yes. So I think that these women have this power. And then you look at, for instance, the Talamasca.
Right. They have power.
They have the power.
I agree that power exists independent of Lasher. But the Mayfair's source of their ultimate source of their power in a broader sense is Lasher.
Is Lasher.
Do you think if Lasher goes away, their power goes away?
I think it's diminished. Yes.
Because, I mean, Lasher,
but they've already got $1 billion. So
as a familiar, can go and do things that, for
them, he started their fortune, right?
He makes them wealthy.
Yeah.
But he also is, you could see that Deirdre was able to control him to go and do that. And Deirdre had some control over him.
She was a powerful witch. Yeah.
Even though she had been drugged state for all those years. She wasn't practicing.
But I also don't think Lasher was fighting her on most of that. Right?
No.
He was like, I want to see Rowan in the shower too.
Yeah, like, but he didn't want to stop.
No, he definitely didn't.
And she made him stop.
She did.
Well, and we know in the books, some of them do get to the point where they can get some control over him.
Yes, that's correct.
Rowan is definitely not there at this point.
At least she's taking action here and she's not being as passive as she was in previous episodes. But still, even when she's taking action, it's really within the framework of Lasher's plan.
Yeah.
And that's when we were joking last week about, it's girl power, but within the patriarchal framework.
Yeah.
Right? And she's got to try to break out of that. I mean, I assume that's the ultimate theme of the show, is that her female power now has to become liberated from this male control.
So let's talk about the fox then.
All right. So the fox, what does the fox generally symbolize?
Being sly and clever.
Quick thinking, clever, sly. Why is it wrapped around the neck of Handjob Harry? I don't know.
Why is Rowan dreaming about it?
Clearly, they're trying to use this fox to symbolize something.
Who's going to be the slyer?
Yeah.
One, Rowan or Lasher, I think. Who does it?
And who's going to outclever who?
Who's going to
outclever? Who is the fox in this story?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's a good theory.
We want to limit it, or I limited it to Rowan and Lasher, but maybe there's some other.
Cortland, maybe.
Cortland could definitely be.
He's a snake. Yeah.
But also the Talamasca. There's something weird that's going on there with the Talamasca.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Mark? Because you brought up the fox.
Obviously, they're trying to tell us something with the fox. I'm not sure they've told us yet. But I will say the fact that the fox stole, or collar or whatever, is on the on Handjob Harry, and that the fox was found dead on the fields. It seems like possibly that men are, you know, in the position of killing foxes, and maybe women are in the position of being the fox. But it's hard to, I mean, it's, it, look, I don't think we have enough information to know for sure.
I've never heard of a fox associated, though, with witchcraft. More like Native Americans, kind of, the, you know, it goes back to something like that.
Foxes can also be symbolic of the devil.
Oh, okay.
Can they?
Yes. So,
I didn't know that.
And that I can see. And this goes back to one of the things that I really want to bring up. And that is this insistence that is rooted very clearly in Christianity, that is, witchcraft has something to do with a pact that you make
with
the devil.
Right.
And the power of the witch comes through that pact with the devil. And the witch has to agree to it. The witch, it's not something that the witch can be tricked into.
Right.
The witch has to actively take part in it. And there was, like, actually a signing. They would go, you know, this is where they would talk in the last week's episode where
can I have my lawyer look this over
where the women, where the women all gathered in the forest.
It's like they marry the devil, but that's part of the prenup.
The thought that people would be heading out into the woods in the middle of the night when there are still wolves living in the woods.
Yeah, it's super dangerous.
It's very dangerous. And, you could just
fall down a ravine or something.
Fall down, hurt yourself, fall into water. No, I mean, real.
What a
real
shitty way to die.
Look, people, if you look at the death rolls, which is something. Which I have.
Always.
Village death rolls, right?
Yeah.
Or even city death rolls. A lot of people.
Fell into the bog.
Kill themselves. They fall into ditches. They fall at night. They're walking down the high street.
Been there, bro. I get it.
They fall into a ditch and break their neck.
And your fraternity brothers are nowhere around to help you.
Or they drown, right? They fall into a ditch and then they drown. So people aren't tramping out into the middle of the woods. That's what they wanted to believe happened. That is not probably what actually happened.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it never happened, but you'd need torches. You need a lot of light. This is not something that you would be sneaking out to do.
No.
Right. If you were going to go out into the woods and it would have been a big thing. And if all of a sudden a group of women with torches went walking out,
someone's
going to notice that you're walking out at night into the woods. So,
like some Karen is looking out her window going, they're leaving with torches. Call the HOA. There's no torch carrying after dark.
They would. Oh, my God. Especially if it was my HOA.
Oh, yeah.
I have a hard time with this belief or the way that it's being portrayed, that this power is coming from this pact or this understanding with this force, right? And I understand why it's being told that way. It's the way that Anne Rice told it, but it kind of is a disappointing way to tell that story. I'd rather it be that they have these powers, and that's kind of what's going on with the Talamasca, that they have these powers and they go into the Talamasca and they develop those powers, and those powers are used for whatever reason.
So one of the big themes on this show is identity. Knowing yourself, others knowing you, you knowing others. So that's obviously a huge thing between Cyprian and Rowan, where, you know, he's been studying her family as an academic. Now he knows her personally. Now they did the hands, touching hands, reaching out. And now they know each other on a much more intimate level.
They know each other biblically.
That too. And then Lasher is always talking about how he knows what Rowan wants, right? Rowan, on the other hand, does not necessarily know what Rowan wants. And I was looking at that kind of, I thought, a bit of an odd choice of song for their little dance party. So let's just talk about that song a little bit. It's Depth of My Soul by Thievery Corporation. Let's talk about some of the lyrics. You believe what you see, all the things that you know, but oh, you don't know the depth of my soul. And they're dancing to that, right? So is that Lasher saying that to Rowan? It's like, I know you, but you don't really know me. and I'm just going to tell you what, you know, I kind of want you to think so you go along with my plan? Or is that really Lasher thinks he knows Rowan, but he really doesn't get it because he's not human enough or whatever? I don't think they pick a song like that accidentally. I don't know if it has a huge depth of meaning, but I think they're intentionally trying to say something about identity and knowing each other there.
I think that Lasher's been around long enough that he would know, right? He would know himself. He would know what he was trying to do. I think it was the other way around.
That might be the case, although at least in the book, Lasher really didn't have a great grasp on his own history or self-knowledge, or at least he didn't share it.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, how did you begin? I don't know. I just, at some point, I became aware that I existed. What are you? I don't know. What do you want me to be? I'm Lasher. I'm yours. I'm your slave. I'm your servant. He doesn't really have a super great...
But he does seem to know what he wants to do.
Oh, he do. There's no doubt about that. And he's got fairly instinctual base needs that he's been scheming for centuries to try to, satisfy.
So you say he's just not self-aware?
Yeah.
I think he's just focused on
making the Mayfair witches into whatever he needs them to be.
Right. Okay.
That's his focus.
100% this entire story is about identity.
Yeah.
I think that the book is for sure. The TV series seems to be going in that direction. There's a lot of the identity in your blood, the connection to who you are in this very biological way.
Yeah, there's some questionable genetic arguments being made that could possibly stray into dangerous territory, but a lot of writers use that. They give the power of blood center stage moment, right? You inherited this through your family, through the generations. This is who you are.
Well, and bloodline is, you know, I mean, that is an important thing. I mean, historically, bloodline is a very important thing.
Sure.
Well, it's the crux of this whole story, their bloodline.
But you always have to kind of watch stories like that to see if they drift into eugenics, right? So here's another thing on the identity thing. Definitely in the book, but I think somewhat in the show as well. I think they're reflecting this somewhat. Lasher's existence is largely dependent on the Mayfairs and those who observe him. He draws strength and power from others seeing him and interacting with him. His identity isn't this rock solid thing, I don't think, that he has any awareness of. He just knows that he gets stronger when people pay attention to him or notice him. Whereas, you know, the Mayfair witches could exist, maybe not as wealthy or as powerful, but they could have existed without Lasher. I don't think the reverse is true. Because Suzanne really coalesces him and calls him into existence.
But in the series, he definitely seems to have much more power.
He does. And they've definitely done that deliberately. And I think it's just an easier way to deal with that character.
I think so, too.
Is to make him a powerful demon rather than this kind of more nebulous
spirit
thing. Yeah.
Millie exists in relation to Carlotta very clearly.
Absolutely.
Her spirit
is
there.
That's why she's hanging around.
And she says, if I can't be in touch with her, I'm dissolving again. Yeah. I'm
dying all over again.
She's melting. She's melting.
She is melting.
Stuart Townsend, his soul just got stuck.
He got stuck because he died in the Mayfair.
He died
house there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you think Carlotta's soul is stuck?
I was going to ask that, right? Is Rowan going to be able to communicate still with Millie?
Oh, I think Millie's not. I bet you Millie will be gone.
She's gone, but I don't know. I
think without Carlotta there to anchor her, she gone.
Do you think that Rowan will anchor Carlotta?
No.
I mean, unless suddenly Rowan would go, whoa, Carlotta was right all along.
Yeah.
And then find that she's a help to her. But that would be so off book. And also, you know, have some kind of connection with Carlotta. It could be that Carlotta comes back to haunt her and upset her.
It's possible.
All right, so now let's talk about one of the things that I think that could bother me. In the book, Suzanne is the mother of Deborah. We know that Deborah exists in the TV series universe because we saw her portrait. Suzanne is the mother of Deborah. Deborah was Mary Bagot, but there's no Deborah right now in the TV series with Suzanne.
Give her time.
There's only Flory. And we see in scenes coming next week that Suzanne is in a cage.
Yeah.
And the persecutions are coming. So my thought is we see Flory walking away from the witch hunter and she starts repeating the Latin words. I am wondering if now Flory is going to be Deborah.
Yeah.
That changes things. And here's why it changes things for me in a way that I'm not particularly keen on. There's a little bit of magic about Deborah's parentage.
Right.
Because you don't know, they don't know who the father is. The rumor is that it's the Lord of the Manor, but she's one of those kind of births that there's no real clear idea of who the father is. And so it could be a miraculous, it could be some kind of, don't roll your eyes at me.
Too late.
But it could be a miraculous birth. And I like that because I like the way that fits in with the religious symbolism and all of the
rest. Speaking of religious symbolism.
Yes.
Did you get that vibe from Sip's injury?
Oh, the stab wound to the side.
Roman the spear to the side of Jesus. Huh.
Now that you're saying
you're
it.
You're welcome. Oh.
And just so you know, guys, Carlotta is in all 8 episodes. So.
Oh, she is.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
Here's what I know.
We're going to get some piece of her.
Oh, yeah. Good. Running the
now,
show.
How's your friendship with her going?
Oh,
you guys are BFFs.
I know. She's responded to me on Twitter, everyone. That's
that
so
exciting?
Cool. It really is.
And then I was like, Christina, you say something else to her. She's like, oh, no, I don't want to. Yeah. Opportunity missed.
No, I mean, you know.
That was a mistake.
We're friends. I don't know.
Friends.
Call me Beth. All right, let's do standout character. We didn't do that last week, but we had like 3 hours worth of lengthy conversation with Micah. But let's do a quick standout character. It doesn't have to be too long. Mark, who's your standout character?
I mean, it's got to be Carlotta.
Damn you, Mark.
You're welcome. And she didn't even have a lot in this episode, but what she did have was pretty dramatic. Just hanging there over the scene.
She was
suspended.
So tiny. She was like a little. She's
well,
so
she is
cute.
Tiny. And I have to say, when I first saw her, I'm like, she's dead already? Like, did he hang her? But no, she was just like on a coat hook or something.
She was
I guess.
Suspended
animation. Some kind of spiritual coat hook. Mm-hmm. Then she just couldn't. She has no chill. Even if you're, you feel like you have to kill Rowan. I mean, strategy, girl, right? But no, she had, Carlotta's going to Carlotta. But again, another great performance by Beth Grant. Look, just, really bringing all the drama.
I'm still choosing Carlotta because my reason is a little different than Mark's. Like I had said earlier.
I.e. wrong.
Excuse me. I admire Carlotta's commitment to the cause, right? Girlfriend ended last episode trying to burn Rowan to the ground inside the house. And within like 2 minutes of being removed from her suspended animation situation, Rowan's like, I want to get out of here. And she's like, there's another way out. Let's go. And, Rowan doesn't think anything of it. Like,
dude, that's bad guy 101. Say, oh yeah, I'll give you your freedom. Ugh,
yeah.
Stab him in the
heart.
Yeah,
I know you just tried to kill me, but let me believe you. And she goes upstairs and Rowan couldn't believe it that, she was able to walk right out the door and there's Carlotta. Like, you got to go. I need to kill you. And she almost succeeded, but Rowan just, Jedi minded her vessels in her brain and popped a few of them. And that
That's
was
like
it.
Dark Jedi shit right there.
Yeah.
That's
massively dark. But so I give it to her for being committed to her mission. Like she was a dog with a bone. Christina, who's yours?
Hey, you guys are going to kill me, but I think it's Lasher in this episode.
All right.
God, I don't know. First of all, he looked good in that tux. I'm not going to lie. I don't know why you don't think he looks good, Joe, but whatever.
I don't know if we're looking at the same guy here. Like, maybe my lighting is off on my TV. I don't know, but
I don't know. I thought that Jack Houston looked quite good in the tuxedo. I think that he did a good job in. He made me wonder whether or not he was in control of Rowan. He did a good job of treading that line, acting-wise, right? He could have come on as very heavy-handed, and it would have been very, very clear that he was running the whole show.
Right.
But he showed enough frustration that it made me think, maybe he can't do.
Or they're jockeying for control.
Yeah,
right?
They are. And there was that. It wasn't quite to the level of chess maneuvers as what we saw in Interview with the Vampire between Lestat and Claudia, but it's along those lines. And he did a good job of not doing like too heavy-handed of an eye roll when she was getting the better of him.
He wasn't the evil puppet master thing.
And what he's doing there is interesting to me and kind of saying to Rowan, I can give you all of the things that you want. These are the things that you want. But as adults, as human beings, there are times where we want things that aren't good for us, that we shouldn't want to have, like cake. Right. So he's indulging her and he is. And she says there's a reason that she says, I'm not a 6-year old. My heart's desire is not cake. And he's like, don't be embarrassed, babe.
Yeah, it is. Your cake,
I know you want some cake. And he gives her the things that she wants, even if those things are not good for her. And imagine how difficult it is. And here's where Carlotta comes back in. Imagine how difficult it is if you have something, a force or some way where you could get exactly what you want at all times. If you want to eat,
push the lever, get the pellet.
You want to get that, and you have someone that will be able to do that, or a force that will be able to get that for you. Imagine the fortitude it would take to say, No,
don't give me my heart's desire.
No, don't give me my heart's desire.
No more cake, please, sir.
So what I see him doing in that role in this episode, particularly because we see a lot more of him and he's interacting a lot more, is him showing that he does this, but also that he does have some kind of frustration with her, that she doesn't kind of fall all in.
Because it's not a possession and control. It's a seduction.
It would be interesting if they would show the history of the Mayfairs, the deeper history of the Mayfairs, through the Lasher lens.
Right. Because he was there for all that.
He was there for all that.
Maybe they will.
I hope that they do. I hope that's season two.
You know, you kept saying Jack Houston, and every time I've heard his name, it never clicked. And I'm like, I wonder if he's related to Angelica Houston.
It's a reasonable question. Is he?
He's her nephew.
Aha.
And
I can kind of almost see a resemblance.
Sure. And
that's how he got the job.
And that means that he's also related to John Houston.
Correct.
Yes. So this is not an acting slouch. Well, he's been in other things and he's good in Boardwalk Empire.
All right, guys, let's talk about our other segment we have that's called Witch Please. Mark, what were some of your favorite witchy moments?
Well, I was interested in the unbinding.
That was amazing.
So if you think of a binding spell as being a curse or a restriction put on a witch or somebody by a witch or by another magical entity, the unbinding is really remove curse. He has this cursed wound and she's trying to unbind it. She's trying to untie it. He's got this cursed wound that is definitely not going to be able to be healed with antibiotics and hydrogen peroxide or anything of that sort. So they bring in their, you know, their witch medicine specialist who has to now go all in this exhausting process of unbinding the curse in that wound. So I thought that was very, very good. So I think I'll go with that one.
This might be a record for the second time this episode. I am going to agree with Mark.
Mark is on fire.
But again, my reasons are going to be slightly better. That witch that they brought in was just so badass. The way that, you know, she kind of sucks the bad energy and bad juju out of Sip into her own body. And you can see her very real, very visceral reaction to it. And then at the end, she yanks this 8-9-inch blade out of her side and just kind of like slumps over. I was just like, for me, that might have been my favorite moment of the entire series.
So here's something to cut the cake with.
Yes, exactly. Cut your cake. No, but it was so cool, though. Yeah.
And that is a fairly common way to describe healing spells, is the practitioner takes the poison or the disease into their body, and they kind of conquer it because they haven't lost 5 pints of blood. Right. And they're, you know, they take it and they can conquer it, and then it they let it go, and it takes it out of the person who was already
pulling the blade out of herself. Was
that was pretty dramatic.
I'm like, what is she rooting around for in there? And I'm like, what's in there? And all of a sudden, just this big ass knife. So, I mean, there was a lot of magic. And at first, I did think that the whole house being a place where if you die, your spirit doesn't leave, kind of like that too. But then as I was watching it, I was like, okay, I'm going to note that as like, so far, it's like my kind of favorite thing I like about it. But when I saw that knife come out her side, I'm like, badass bitch, badass witch, love it.
I think it's the house. I think it's the house, the magic of the house. And of course, I recognize that that magic is largely Lasher's magic. But yeah. I think that there's the magic of the house, particularly the part that Joanne didn't like, the very early scenes where they're stuck in that time loop.
Yeah.
I was so drawn into that. And I was so like, okay, like I knew watching it. I'm like, well, something's amiss here. Like
wrong.
Something's
We're not
wrong.
Just
like,
having happy Sunday sex day.
And I knew it from the jump, but I didn't quite know what it was going to be or how it was going to be. That was all in their imagination.
Yeah. I think the they're trapped in some kind of psychic world somewhere. Yeah. Right. And they're not, who knows if the passage of time outside is even happening.
Right.
They're just stuck in this.
They're
experience.
Stuck in that experience. And I don't think that that's even, I don't think that it's really happening. I don't think that there's a breakfast being made. I don't think that they're actually eating the breakfast. I think it's just this
constant
intense
feeling loop.
Yeah. Like they're caught in a movie or a dream or something along those lines. But the whole house thing and the power of the house as a character and the interplay of everybody's magic, Lasher's and and the witches, the Mayfair women's power coalescing in that house and that house becoming this very powerful.
So if you were there with Lasher.
Oh, I'd be like, Lasher, tell me what
don't worry about the cake. Just tell me I'm right.
Lasher be in his tuxedo all the time.
And we just say, you know what? I love the look. I think we're just going to go to the hairstylist real quick.
Yeah, could we, Lasher, your hair, I would want it to be a little bit shorter, but there we are.
Can we just trim you up?
You guys, I just had an epiphany about something.
Lay it on us.
Hear me out.
Oh,
here it comes.
Sounds
Christina.
Like
hear
one of
me
my
out
theories.
This time. Yes, I'm stealing Christina's words. So, okay, as I'm sitting here thinking about the badass witch, and I'm like, so there are witches in the Talamasca that are capable, right? Not like the idiots that showed up with their oil cans to keep Lasher and his mischief out of the building. Do you think that, because we know the Talamasca is definitely shady, that maybe they didn't really do the best spell that they could because they wanted her to get out of that building and wanted Lasher to get in? Because they obviously have talented witches.
Yeah, but maybe, Sip should see through that, right?
Well, is he the brightest?
But somebody's wiping the memories.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's a very good guess because we know in the books that Talamasca become very interested in Taltos.
Yeah. Let's talk about our final thought.
Overall, it was one of the better episodes because I know that, Mayfair Witches in the Anne Rice universe is not the typical current, witchy woo stuff that we're used to. And I like that stuff. I like my witches performing spells that are blatantly obvious. Call me crazy, but that's how I like
You're crazy
my witches. And I felt like this episode gave me a little bit more of that than the other ones. I remember Micah saying that, they appreciate the subtlety of the witchcraft, but I like it to smack me in the face. I shouldn't
I've
say
heard that.
That
about you.
Jesus Christ.
Just smack me in the face with it.
I mean, normally I like to throw things in there like that to just make Mark wildly uncomfortable. But I didn't intend it to. And as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm doing it.
There you go.
As I was saying it, I did not intend.
Sure, you didn't.
Fuck.
Simple things for simple minds is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. I'm easy, Mark.
Well, Again.
Here we go. We can't seem to get off this train, no matter how many takes we have of this.
Get now off. You're getting it. You can't get off.
That's right. Oh, you said get off.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right.
Okay. I also, let me change the subject of this. You know, the scenes with Carlotta, you always say Christina, she's, the character is just very campy. And we got some more of that. But overall, I'm sad that she's gone. I'm hoping that we get more of her in a, you know, more than just like a flashback or something. I'm hoping she's tethered to the house the same way Millie was. Did I love the episode? No, but it was probably one of the better ones for me. Mark, what did you think?
Look, I thought it was a wild episode. I think I'm not even sure whether I'm going to have any criticisms or strong praise for it yet, because it was just so wild and so many things happen. I need to kind of see what they're going to do with those things, because they definitely have really started hammering home that idea of identity and knowing yourself and others. And I want to kind of see where they go with that. But also, they're all in on the magic, right? And I want to see ultimately how that works. I mean, I'm a big fantasy literature fan. And one of the major things that I look for in, you know, new series or whatever is how consistent and sensible, if you will, their magic system is. If you don't have some rules for those things, it's just chaos. So I'm going to be interested to see how they handle that, because obviously they've got a more extensive magical system than Anne Rice ever did, right? She didn't really have spells. She does have lore on how creatures work, but really not spells per se, and never really went into the detail of how vampire powers really worked. She kept that deliberately, I think, a little mysterious. But now that you're going to go all in on magic, then it's going to have some system to it, right? So there has to be limitations to it, and you have to see how it's going to work and not work in certain situations, which I think could be very interesting. I just want to see how they're going to do it.
So for me, the big thing about this episode was the last scene where they turn everything upside down.
Literally
and
figuratively.
And I want to know how that's going to play out, right? So that, to me, was probably the most interesting shot of the entire episode. Remember last week, Micah mentioned the concept of raising the stakes?
Yeah.
And I think that that has to raise the stakes.
Well, they're trying to tell us that this is, shit's changed, right? Shit's getting real now. Mm-hmm. Now we're turning all our previously held ideas on its head, literally and figuratively.
Right.
So we're going to see. Yeah. I mean, they're basically saying, you know, buckle up. And because you could fall right off the ceiling. Yeah. In a scene like that.
So I probably like this episode, maybe the best out of the three of us, I think. Again, I'm going to be watching that history because I'm getting a little annoyed by some of the stuff that's happening there.
Yeah, you'll be fine. It's a show.
And, okay? Well, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, not to you. I mean, clearly.
Right. I'm watching that. I'm watching how the parallels are, you know, so sort of we know that the witch hunter is there. We've seen the previews for the coming episode where the witch hunters are ranting and raving in with bullhorns in previews.
I was going to say, wow, did they have bullhorns?
Yeah, that's going to be exciting, I think. I think that's going to be good.
So that, there's going to be some real conflict there. I'm interested in that. And I just, God, for me, Sip, every episode, Sip becomes less and less interesting and less significant.
Yep.
And maybe that's purposeful because she's being fascinated by Lasher.
Yeah.
But then if that's the case, I need to be much more fascinated by Lasher. There needs to be many, many more scenes where he's in that tuxedo. Or whatever, like to get, make
glam
me,
him up a little.
Fascinate me, Lasher. I want to be fascinated.
How about a cape? Do you want a cape?
Well, I mean, maybe.
A kilt? I don't know. What do you want?
I don't know. I want some.
Maybe you'll get him in a kilt.
Could maybe, but I want to see. Well, we must get him in the past. We must. Oh, sure. We must see him.
Oh, I can't wait to see that hair in the past.
Hopefully he's not wearing one of those dumb leather pimp hats that everybody seems to be wearing back then. Those are awful hats.
Well, I mean, everybody had to have a hood on.
Well, you didn't have to have a hat like that, though.
Well, yeah, I thought it was a good episode. Right. I'm looking forward to what the upside down.
Well, and
that's
my major thing is, have you shown me enough this episode that I'm eager to see next week's to see what you do with it?
I am.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm eager to see, and I don't know if I'm, like, I know that there are a lot of people online, the response online has been just, like, I know people are just trying to gut it out. I see a lot of vampire
fans. Yeah, but those are people saying that. I mean, aren't the ratings for this quite good?
They are. The ratings are quite good, which says to me also our own listenership is showing us that there are people who are coming to the podcast that weren't here before.
Correct.
So I would say there's two separate audiences, I think.
Make yourselves known, people.
Yes, come and follow us on Twitter and say hello, please. Joe, do you want to take us out?
Sure thing. All right, guys, that is a wrap on episode 5, The Thrall. We hope that you enjoyed yourselves as much as we enjoyed discussing the episode. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at vampire_insider. You're also welcome to follow us on our personal Twitter accounts. Mark is at Mark Eats Beach. Christina is at Christina Gen X. And I am at JustBlockMe_1. You could also find us on other social media apps by typing in Vampire Insider. Thank you guys and have a wonderful night. Good night, Mark. Good night, Christina.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts. I mean, you can't be foxier than being naked.
Mark, you're obsessed with nudity.
I am.
God.
I have to say, I was very surprised this series decided not to do nudity. I was.
Okay.
It was an interesting choice by the showrunner.
I think that's because the intimacy in this has nothing to do with naked bodies, but with naked souls, Joanne.
Nobody wants to see that.
Obsessed with souls.